Chapter 3, The Warren Harding Error, Why We Fall for Tall, Dark, and Handsome Men. Early one morning in 1899, in the back garden of the Globe Hotel in Richwood, Ohio, two men met while having their shoes shined. One was a lawyer and lobbyist from the state capital of Columbus. His name was Harry Daugherty. He was a thick-set, red-faced man with straight black hair, and he was brilliant. He was the Machiavelli of Ohio politics, the classic behind-the-scenes fixer, a shrewd and insightful judge of character, or, at least, political opportunity. The second man was a newspaper editor from the small town of Marion, Ohio, who was at that moment a week away from winning election to the Ohio State Senate. His name was Warren Harding. Daugherty looked over at Harding and was instantly overwhelmed by what he saw. As the journalist Mark Sullivan wrote of that moment in the garden, Harding was worth looking at. He was, at the time, about 35 years old. His head, features, shoulders, and torso had a size that attracted attention. Their proportions to each other made an effect which in any male, at any place, would justify more than the term handsome. In later years, when he came to be known beyond his local world, the word Roman was occasionally used in descriptions of him. As he stepped down from the stand, his legs bore out the striking and agreeable proportions of his body, and his lightness on his feet, his erectness, his easy bearing, added to the impression of physical grace and virility. His suppleness, combined with his bigness of frame, and his large, wide-set, rather glowing eyes, heavy black hair, and markedly bronze complexion gave him some of the handsomeness of an Indian. His courtesy as he surrendered his seat to the other customer suggested genuine friendliness toward all mankind. His voice was noticeably resonant, masculine, warm. His pleasure in the attentions of the bootblack's whisk reflected a consciousness about clothes unusual in a small-town man. His manner as he bestowed a tip suggested generous good nature, a wish to give pleasure based on physical well-being and sincere kindliness of heart. In that instant, as Daugherty sized up Harding, an idea came to him that would alter American history. Wouldn't that man make a great president? Warren Harding was not a particularly intelligent man. He liked to play poker and golf and to drink and, most of all, to chase women. In fact, his sexual appetites were the stuff of legend. As he rose from one political office to another, he never once distinguished himself. He was vague and ambivalent on matters of policy. His speeches were once described as an army of pompous phrases moving over the landscape in search of an idea. After being elected to the U.S. Senate in 1914, he was absent for the debates on women's suffrage and prohibition, two of the biggest political issues of his time. He advanced steadily from local Ohio politics only because he was pushed by his wife Florence, stage managed by the scheming Harry Daugherty, and because, as he grew older, he grew more and more irresistibly distinguished. Once at a banquet, a supporter cried out, "Why, the son of a bitch looks like a senator," and so he did. By early middle age, Harding's biographer Francis Russell writes, his lusty black eyebrows contrasted with his steel-gray hair to give the effect of force. His massive shoulders and bronzed complexion gave the effect of health. Harding, according to Russell, could have put on a toga and stepped on stage in a production of Julius Caesar. Daugherty arranged for Harding to address the 1916 Republican presidential convention because he knew that people only had to see Harding and hear that magnificent, rumbling voice to be convinced of his worthiness for higher office. In 1920, Daugherty convinced Harding, against Harding's better judgment, to run for the White House. Daugherty wasn't being facetious. He was serious. Daugherty, ever since the two had met, had carried in the back of his mind the idea that Harding would make a great president, Sullivan writes. Sometimes, unconsciously, Daugherty expressed it with more fidelity to exactness, a great-looking president. Harding entered the Republican convention that summer sixth among a field of six, Daugherty was unconcerned. The convention was deadlocked between the two leading candidates, so Daugherty predicted the delegates would be forced to look for an alternative. To whom else would they turn in that desperate moment, if not to the man who radiated common sense and dignity and all that was presidential? In the early morning hours, as they gathered in the smoke-filled back rooms of the Blackstone Hotel in Chicago, the Republican Party bosses threw up their hands and asked, wasn't there a candidate they could all agree on? And one name came immediately to mind. Harding. Didn't he just look like a presidential candidate? So Senator Harding became Candidate Harding. And later that fall, after a campaign conducted from his front porch in Marion, Ohio, Candidate Harding became President Harding. Harding served 2 years before dying unexpectedly of a stroke. He was, most historians agree, one of the worst presidents in American history.